Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Holy Fika. Well, today isn't really a Holy Fika, but it is a Holy Fika because we're Fika friends and it's sort of a coffee break. But today, I'm sitting at McDonald's. Now, I know you've all been to McDonald's, so what's so special about that? What's that got to do with coffee? Well, I happen to know that there's a bunch of guys from our church and from Moose Lake that they come to McDonald's for coffee all the time. So people do come to McDonald's for coffee. And I'm not here for coffee, though, today. I'm doing something that probably I shouldn't be doing, you know. And maybe you've done this, too. I'm having a shamrock shake. Yeah. Now, I don't have shakes very often. I'm not a big malt shake guy. But there are some shakes that I really like. And around St. Patrick's Day, I really like the shamrock shake. I really do. I like that minty, you know, it's kind of sweet. And so if you haven't had a shamrock shake yet this year, you should get yourself over to a McDonald's or someplace that's got them. I know a lot of people are doing special. I actually know that Caribou in Moose Lake is kind of doing a takeoff on, they've got kind of a coffee thing like that. And so anyway, here we are. This isn't where we were going to be today. In fact, I had a really great place that we were going to be going and had it all worked out. And then all of a sudden, it hit me. Oh my goodness, St. Patrick's Day is Friday. We've got to do St. Patrick's Day. We can't do it next week. We've got to do it this week. So next week, we're going to do what we were going to do this week, which is going to be really good. So I'm just giving you a little bit of a heads up on that, I think you're going to really like where we go, and you're going to be surprised. So you're going to learn a little bit about the area next week. So, having said that, hopefully kind of baited the hook a little bit for us to have Holy Fika next Wednesday again. But today, of course, is Wednesday, and we have family night and the dinner, community dinner at our church. If you don't have a place to go for dinner tonight, come on over and join us. And we have a couple of Bible studies going and a kids club and a youth group. And people just like to come for dinner sometimes and hang around and afterwards and visit. So join us. I had to laugh a couple of weeks ago. A couple came for the first time and I met them at the door. And they said, "We're here for the dinner." And their eyes got big because they were surprised that the room was full and that we were just having a great time. And so join us. You don't have to attend the Barnum Community Church to have dinner with us. You know, we eat with other people. So come and be part of Wednesday night. It's a fun thing. And the people who do the cooking just do a great job. And I wish I could tell you what it is today, but I kind of slipped by to get to McDonald's, so I didn't stop and find out. But if you go to our website, I believe it's posted there, and I think it's posted on Facebook as well, as to what's on the menu, because some of you like to know that from week to week. Also, Easter's coming, and you know, we're kind of now we're putting the accelerator down and getting ready and planning and the prep, and a lot of good things are going to happen. It starts off with April Fool's Day, actually, which is the day before Palm Sunday, and we'll be doing the Easter egg hunt at Barnum Elementary, and it's out in their playground there, that park right by the elementary school on the north side of Barnum on Old 61. And my understanding is that there's going to be like maybe 10,000 eggs. 10,000. Yeah, I know you're going, "Oh my goodness, 10,000 eggs? Yeah, 10,000. And some of them have quarters in them, and some of them have other little fun things in. And the kids, it looks like a vacuum cleaner. Seriously, when we say go, it starts out and the kids just, whoa, right through the field. And it's just like they suck them up. And no kidding, within 15 minutes, 10,000 eggs are picked up. It's just something. Listen, if you don't even have a kid to bring to it, come and watch it, because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And that's going to be the day before Palm Sunday. And then, of course, we have on Sunday, Palm Sunday, which is just fun. We have the palms and we wave them, and you know, we all look like we're in a duck blind or something, and we think about the beginning of Holy Week, and you'll enjoy that. Wednesday night is a His History Night. His, H-I-S-T-O-R-Y. And we'll be showing a film. And it's we always do a Life of Jesus kind of film to kind of put the whole story together for us. And, you know, we have a good projector and a large screen. And you'll be able to watch that. And that's on Wednesday night. And then on Thursday, we have a communion service. And we come to, like, a tent and sit at a table like the disciples did, you know, like the painting you've seen, that kind of thing. And it's just a moving time. It's a great way to share in the Lord's table. People seem to really enjoy it. And then on Friday night, we have the Crossroads service that we share with Mattawa Covenant. And we always enjoy meeting with them. You know, when I was a kid, maybe you remember this too. Yeah, for me, I have to remember back a ways. But I remember well in Mattawa, for example, it was like, they call it the Union Good Friday service. Now, union had nothing to do with the labor union, but it meant that the churches all came together. And it was actually a three-hour service, and it was divided into half-hour segments. And so people could come and go at the half-hour mark. But every half-hour, one of the churches would have the responsibility for that half-hour. And their pastor would do a devotional, and the music would be brought by them, special music. And so it was a shared together kind of a thing. And it was really a cool deal. Well, we don't seem to do that kind of stuff together as much anymore, but Mattawa Covenant and Barnum Community, we're gonna do a Good Friday service together. So join us. You don't have to be part of either one of those churches. If you're part of no church, that's a good night to come, because no one will know where you belong. Yeah, and they will say, oh, they must be from Mattawa Covenant. So people from Mattawa will say, oh, you must be from Barnum. And guess what? You can have anonymity. So join us on Good Friday. And then Easter Sunday. Wow, bingo. It's a great celebration. So, and then Thursday night, I forgot. We're not doing the dinner this year, the Jesus dinner, but instead following that service, we're having coffee. And like Mid-Eastern desserts, and I can't even give you a description yet of them, but I know one of them is going to be like a baklava, and they'll use a lot of honey and dates and spices, the kind of desserts, the kind of sweets that would have been eaten at the time of Jesus, what Jesus might have enjoyed with a cup of tea, you know, so it's great. Easter's coming, don't miss it. But today, what are we doing today? I really have to tell you that, and those of you that know me, my Fika friends, and other years we've talked about it, I just really feel it's important to once again talk about St. Patrick. I really do. And I know there's so many legends about St. Patrick. It's kind of like when someone dies and you go to their funeral. I say this respectfully, but sometimes, have you ever gone to someone's funeral and when it's over, the person that people have talked about, you go, boy, I didn't know him. You know, it's like after you die, you become a hero. Well, St. Patrick has taken on a lot of legend since the real St. Patrick lived. And I don't know if you know much about the real St. Patrick, if you know much about his story. Because the real St. Patrick, the historic St. Patrick, is much more incredible than any of the stories about St. Patrick. Really, really. I mean, some of the goofy stories we hear about St. Patrick compared to who he really was and what he really did and what God was doing at work and what we can really learn from his life, it's important to repeat that. And in 2 days, you're gonna be seeing all kinds of green, and people will be talking about the green, and people will be kind of dressed. You notice I got my suspenders on, I got my tie on, got my hat. I'll tell you what, I have a lot of other St. Patrick stuff too, and drinking my Shamrock Shake. I want to clarify, even though this is Holy Fika, I'm not drinking Irish coffee, and I'm not drinking Baileys, and I'm not drinking Guinness. But, okay, I gotta do this. Do any of you know about Guinness? You know, the beer. You know, I'm talking about Guinness, the beer. You're going, oh, what are you doing on this on Holy Fika today? Listen, I'm not an advocate for it. I'm not advocating Guinness spirits, but I gotta tell you something funny. That Sir Alec Guinness, who is the developer, the inventor, I don't know what you call someone, the brewer, the first brewer of Guinness, was a believer in Jesus. Seriously. And a serious believer in Jesus. He was a Christ follower. And at that time in Ireland, there was a significant alcohol problem because the water was so bad. And the whiskey we all know about Jameson, Irish whiskey, and we hear the stories about it, and Irish coffee with the whiskey all this stuff. And people, families were being destroyed by alcohol in Ireland. And Guinness said, what are we going to do? Something's going to happen. And so Guinness, as a solution to the bad water and the alcoholism that was being brought by distilled liquors, came up with Guinness beer as the solution. Interesting, isn't it? And so he did that. And the other thing that Sir Alec Guinness did is not only did he address the alcohol issues of Ireland, but he was the founder of the Sunday school movement in Ireland. He was concerned about children coming to know Jesus. And so he was the starter of Sunday schools all throughout the country. Not only that, but in the area of labor, there were child labor issues and labor abuse. He addressed that as well, not only in his own brewery, but addressed it culturally. So Guinness was a... when you see this now on Friday and you see all the advertisements for it, it's just kind of interesting to know about them. In fact, there have been a couple of books written about Guinness, and you might find that interesting as well. So let's get on with St. Patrick here. So St. Patrick was actually not Irish. Did I just blow your bubble on that? But he actually is not an Irishman. He was a British Celt. And he lived in a culture that was... the best way, there are words to describe it, and the words that describe the culture of St. Patrick and Ireland at the time, we'll make that connection in a minute, some of the words are secular, meaning there was no Christian memory. When a culture reaches a point that there is no Christian memory anymore, that culture is called a secularized culture. There's something of that happening in American culture, Jay. I'm not sure if you thought through that at all, but this is one of the issues that I think we've not come to grips with, that there are people that actually have no memory of Christian faith in America. It used to be, and when we grew up, it was part of the school system, it was part of what we... there was a linkage, even though there was a separation of church and state, there was an understanding. But I have to tell you, I've had persons that have asked me to marry them, and in fact, a number of couples that have never been inside a church, not even for a funeral, or wedding, or Christmas, or Easter. I mean, there's no memory, but they see a building that they know is a religion building, but the Christian memory is gone. It's gone. And there's a lot of kids in school these days that if you were to poll in our elementary schools, you would find that it's a secularized culture. There it's not Christian from the standpoint of there's no memory of Christian faith. Also urban, the idea of it was an urban culture. And urban cultures are cultures that are out of touch with the revelation of God. One of the beauties that those of us that live in rural areas, and we live in the northern part of the state here, you can live in any state in a rural area, is that we're really in touch. Look behind me at the snowbanks. We're really in touch with natural revelation. We understand it. A lot of people that I know well that hunt and fish that are friends of mine, one of the things that you'll hear guys say that that are not religious at all, or not connected, not churchy, so to speak, at all. And they'll talk in a duck blind or in deer hunting about how beautiful God's creation is. And you go, wow, you know, I didn't know. And so there's something about being the natural revelation of God that we see in the outdoors. And those of us that have the privilege of living in the areas we live, and it is a privilege, friends. I love the Twin Cities. We actually own a home in the Twin Cities that we got to figure out what we're going to do in the next few years with it. But and I've pastored churches in downtown Minneapolis, right downtown. In fact, the church right next to what was the Metrodome and now First Bank Stadium. I lived there for years and pastored there. I understand that, and I appreciate the arts of the cities and all of that. But there's something about the natural revelation that we enjoy here. And so the culture had lost their sense of, it had become urban in that sense. It was also a postmodern culture. Postmodern culture where enlightenment means nothing, and it's peer-driven, and it's all right brain, logical. And then we have the what has been used, the term, it's an interesting term, neo-barbarian, which is to say the lack of refinement. So, you know, we as Christians living in today's culture, we don't really know sometimes how to live in that, because those of us of a certain age, we've never seen this before. We've never lived in this before. Missionaries have, but we haven't. And so this is a new world. And when we think of St. Patrick and going to Ireland and his connection with Ireland, he was going basically to a non-Christian, secular, kind of neo-barbarian kind of culture. But he was raised in Britain. He was a British Britgal, and so the myths that we have about him have really destroyed the richness of who he is, and we've lost the idea of the victory that he had over the victory that he had in Christ. And so today, what I want to do is talk a little bit about his life, and then I'd like to come back to talk about what it is that we can learn from him. So, first of all, at age, we know how he was raised. He was raised in the church, by the way. His grandfather was a priest. He went to catechism, for those of you that are familiar with Catholic catechism. He was catechized, but by his own description, after catechism, he became alienated from the teachings of the catechism. And by his own word, he called himself, he became wild. He became very wild in his living, and basically walked away from all faith, which, you know, we've seen that. Others have done that after catechism and after confirmation. And St. Patrick was one of those. He walked away from it. And then at age 16, he was kidnapped. He was kidnapped by the Irish Celts, and he was taken to Ireland, and they sold him. He went on the slave market, and he was sold to a king, a tribal chief in Ireland, one of many, many tribal chiefs that were there, and he herded cattle for 6 years. From age 16 to age 22, he was out in the fields, and he herded cattle, and he said that it was in his herding of cattle that he reconnected with the revelation of God. And the catechism made sense. In other words, the right brain material that he had learned in catechism, life was blown into it as he herded the cattle. Now, doesn't this remind you of the Bible where the scriptures talk about you meant it for bad, you meant it for evil, but God used it for good? And how many times in our lives is that true? Where something looks so bad and so evil and so, like, how can anything good come out of this? Well, St. Patrick, like, kidnapped, think of it, 16 years old, a young teenage boy, kidnapped and taken to herd cattle and setting out in the field. But just think of that. watching the skies at night, watching the rain come across the pastures, the meadows, seeing the weather change, watching the response of the cattle, all of that. And in that, God was using the natural revelation of his creation to blow life into the teachings that had made no sense and that he had rejected. And so this was from age 22, 16 to 22. And he also, of course, in that time, because he was living with the Irish Celts, he began to he learned their language, and he also learned their culture. And the other thing that's fascinating is that he grew an appreciation for them. God was beginning to build a heart for people that had enslaved them. Now, I want you to think about that. God was building a love in the heart of St. Patrick for the people that had enslaved him. Wow. So what is the love of God? For God so loved the world. Friends, whoever you are listening today, God loves you. God loves you. And what St. Patrick had understood was that even though these people had enslaved them, that they were creations of God too. And he grew in an appreciation, and more than an appreciation, he began to develop a heart for them. That little did he realize that he would ever come back. Because at age 22, God gave him the vision of a boat 200 miles away, and he ran away. He escaped from the enslavement to get out of slavery. And he hiked for 200 miles. I want you to think about that. He hiked 200 miles to go to where this vision told him to go, this dream that he had. I mean, this is a crazy story. And when he gets to the place that he had been instructed to go in his dream, there was a boat waiting on the shore. A boat was there. A boat was prepared for him to go. Now figure that out, friends. This is not the legend of St. Patrick. This is the historical recollection of him. This his story is greater than the legends about him. And so he gets to the boat and he gets in it. And he drifts aimlessly. He doesn't even know where he's going to go. He doesn't know where the boat's going. He basically gets in a drifting boat after a 200-mile hike. 28 days of free float. 28 days. And in that 28 days, he's spending his time praying for food, praying for safety. It's a crazy thing. So he lands at age 22 after 28 days. And now we have a sketchy history of him. For the next 25 years, it's really sketchy. But he ends up coming back to Ireland. And that's because at age 48, which is already way beyond what life expectancy was, 48-year-olds are dead in Ireland at that time and in that part of the world in that time frame. If you make 48, you're doing good. He's 48 years old, and he gets a message. Gets a message from Ireland, and the message says, "We appeal to you, holy servant boy." Now, this is interesting. They're writing a note to a man who should be dead, an old man. I mean, if you should be dead, you'd be viewed as an old man. They're writing a note to an old man saying, "We appeal to you, we beg you, servant boy," because they remember him as a slave boy, and they say, "Come and live among us. Come back and live among us. Your captors are asking you to come back as a 48-year-old. And it's really interesting, because somewhere in all that process, he had become a pastor. And so he goes to the church, but the church was doing church the Roman way. And the Roman way is this. First of all, you civilize someone, then you Christianize someone. You civilize them before you Christianize them. Well, for Patrick, that didn't make a lot of sense. So he asked to go back, and they said, no, you can't go back. They're not civilized yet, so you can't go back as a missionary until they're civilized. Well, why were they viewed as not being civilized? What was this Irish culture like that St. Patrick was being called back to? The people that were saying, come and live with us. What kind of people were these Irish people? Well, first of all, they were viewed as totally kind of crazy people. And the reason for it was, first of all, emotional. They were really emotional people. And the Western Europeans were not that emotional. But the Irish were. They would blow up and they would be emotional in what they did. And in warfare, they were crazy. They were viewed as crazy. They would strip naked and they would charge and howl like demons. And so... The people that they would do battle against would look at them and say, who are these naked men that are chasing us and wanting to kill us and howling? They've got to be demonic. And I'm sure some of it went back to the scripture view of what we see when people are demon-possessed. And so the Irish were viewed, first of all, emotionally as uncontrolled, as in warfare, they were crazy. In religion, they practiced human sacrifice. And in governance, they had no structure. So all of this stuff was going on. So Patrick wants to go back there. So he does ultimately then go back. The coffee people are starting to come, so if you hear a lot of noise. So St. Patrick then ends up going to Ireland. And there are 150 tribes in Ireland at the time. And you have about anywhere from estimates of 200,000 to 500,000 people. But there's only one language, and Patrick knew that language. So, now I want to tell you personally, this story of St. Patrick has so captured me that a number of years ago, Cheryl and I and another couple went to Ireland. Actually, we were gifted the trip, and because the person knew how much St. Patrick, how enamored I was by this couple, offered Cheryl and I the gift of traveling to Ireland. And the high point of the trip, for sure, for me, was to go to the place where Patrick's ship, the boat, landed on the shore. And it would be like the shoreline on the North Shore, actually. It a rocky beach kind of thing. And his boat was pulled up there, and there was a high point. And he was met, by a tribal chief. And the tribal chief, he spoke to him about Jesus. And the tribal chief gave his life to Christ. And St. Patrick climbed up on the mountain. And there's a statue of him up there that's lit. It's absolutely incredible. And I went up early in the morning, the day we were there, a couple of days we were there, and went up early in the morning, climbed the mountain, got up to the statue of St. Patrick, and I read the Confessions of St. Patrick out loud. And I found as I was reading them, my voice got louder and louder, the Confession of St. Patrick. Oh my goodness, it was so powerful. And that is where the beachhead was really established. But what was his method? Well, he came not alone as a missionary, as someone bringing the gospel to the Irish people, but he had an entourage of people with him. Some of them were students at seminary. Some of them were pastors and priests. And some of them were women. And there was an entourage. And what he would do, he would go to a center, a population center, where a tribe lived. And he would, first of all, seek permission to come into the village. That's interesting. Remember, the Apostle Paul would always go to the synagogue first to get permission. Years ago, I was in Guatemala. And I was with a guy that has a wheelchair ministry. And we were exploring new towns in Guatemala, little villages where things that we could bring wheelchairs for children, basically. Well, for all, but there were children wheelchairs as well. And the first thing that he wanted to do, and he was familiar with Guatemala, I was just kind of hanging out with him and prayer support. And the first thing we did was went to City Hall, had a meeting with the mayor, which was very formal with this mayor in this small town, and got permission to be in the town.
And I realized when we did that, the value of that, which is kind of opposite sometimes of the way we do evangelism. We just kind of storm a town and no one knows why you're there, what you're there for. Are you going to harm the kids? Or what are you going to do? Well, Patrick didn't do that. Patrick went to the tribal chief in a town and he would seek permission. And then he would engage the chief and the leaders first. And then he would meet the people. He'd be out in the street. And then he would converse. Not only did he meet people, but there are recorded histories of him talking to people, engaging in the conversation. And of course, he knew the language, so it was so helpful. And then he would preach, and he would pray. He would pray for the sick. He sought out the sick and would pray for the sick and for the possessed, which is really interesting. The power of God visible. Preaching and the power of God visible in healing together. But that wasn't the end of what I call the Trinity of the method of St. Patrick. Because the next thing he did, he would stand and preach, he would pray, and then he would say to people, if you want to see what a community looks like, that's Christ-driven, Christ-centered, Christ-honoring, why don't you come out to our tent town? Because the entourage would live outside of the city limits in like a tent town. They would set up a temporary town. And they would come out and they would see that what they would see people loving each other, sharing with each other, going, wow, this works. What this man is speaking about, it works. We're watching it. And people would come to Christ. It was an amazing thing. And then St. Patrick would, when he felt the time was to leave, he would leave, but he would leave one of the entourage in that village. He would leave someone there to teach and to coach and to model. And then he would invite young men and women to come with him on the entourage. So in other words, he would leave some back, but he would pick some up. And this was, I mean, this is a genius methodology in a pagan culture. Because remember, there are no churches. There is no Christianity there. It's not even hardly civil. But St. Patrick was there. So he did this. And he left behind churches, and he left behind pastors, and he trained pastors along the way. Well, 28 years he lived doing that ministry. And he died on March 17th, 460. 430 years after Jesus. Can you imagine that? 28 years of ministry when he should have been dead. By all purposes, he should have died at 48. And the Lord gave him 28 years of planting churches and say, well, what was the result? What really did happen? Well, what can be documented is that there were 700 churches, 700 communities that St. Patrick was in, and he left churches behind. 700 churches, 120,000 people came to Christ. 120,000 conversions, and over 1,000 pastors were trained and ministered. Wow. This is St. Patrick. Why do I wear the green? Because I like leprechauns? No. Because I like the stories about snakes? No. Because St. Patrick's Day is the celebration of God at work. It's a celebration of so many things. I want to list for you, and then we're going to be done. Before it gets too noisy here. But let me summarize some key points about St. Patrick. And I hope they find root in you. And maybe on Friday, you'll come over to McDonald's someplace and get a shamrock shake. Maybe you put some green on. Not because you're Irish. I mean, I'm not a bit of Irish in me. Are you kidding?
Sorry.
Not a bit of Irish.
Here you are, sir.
Not a bit. The only Irish I have in me is what St. Patrick carried. What I see in St. Patrick that I want in my life. I want in the stream and the woof and weave of who I am. So what is it? First of all, in St. Patrick you see the importance of a personal walk with God. The importance of a personal walk with God. Secondly, the importance of God's promptings. Twice, at age 22 and at age 48, he was prompted by God to do something. And he followed the promptings. That's hard for us to do because we always want to think it through so far and we want to be sure we're doing the right thing and the smart thing and the good stewardship thing. You know, this is a Christ follower dilemma. I've struggled with this as a pastor all my life. I'm pastoring churches. Because sometimes what looks smart doesn't make sense. It just doesn't fit what God is calling me to do. But that's because we don't realize how God is going to meet the needs and how God is going to meet us in the resources that we're going to need to do what we're going to do. So we have the importance of a personal walk with God, and then we have the importance of God's promptings, how important that is, and then the importance of doctrinal discipline. He was trained. So you have this wonderful balance. And friends, training and study and discipline does not have to be oppositional to the spontaneity of God's Spirit in your life. Both are present in Patrick. He's disciplined and trained, but he's also sensitive to the promptings of God. And he has the discernment to live in that. So you have that, and then you have what I learned from Patrick, what is called incarnational ministry. Now, some of you go, oh, he just took a left turn on me here. No. Let me tell you what the word incarnational means, and you'll know what I mean. Patrick lived with the people that God called him to love. Did you hear me? He lived with the people God called him to love. That's what Jesus did. In fact, when we are at Christmas time, we use the word the incarnation, meaning, you know what the word translates? Well, I give it to you, just brass tacks. It's a great one. The word means to pitch one's tent, to pitch a tent among us. So when God describes what Jesus was going to do, it's that Jesus was going to come as a baby and pitch his tent among us, meaning he would live in the middle of us. He would live in the middle of us. Not in some special house someplace far away and then come and visit, but in the middle of us. We found in Guatemala Mission, we were doing a lot with Guatemala, that we were one of the few groups that actually lived in the village. A lot of mission groups, and because of safety, I mean, I get it. But because of a lot of people would go out and they would go out and live in a mission compound. And they would live and then come back into town to do the work. And I'm smiling because there's some people here that are watching that know me. And they just realize what I'm doing and they're going, oh. I'm trying to keep my attention focused on you. But anyway. So we decided to stay in the village, in the houses, the abodes where people actually lived. And so we had the water buckets and we had the honey buckets and we had all that stuff. And it was really interesting because in one tribe particularly, there was an anthropologist that was studying the tribe that we were with. And she came to watch and she said, I can't understand why. They're playing games with, we were playing different games and stuff and having a high old time. I mean, it was so much fun. And they were surprised at that. Well, the reason was because I think we had chosen to live with them. And in 3-4 days, it's like the barriers broke down. And that does make a difference. It does. And Patrick followed that model of Jesus, which is a model for us today, that we live with the people that we call to love. And we don't separate ourselves until we live with them. Patrick did that. And then, of course, the importance of planting. He would plant these churches with believers and say, don't dissipate. No, keep coming together. Keep being together. In fact, I'm going to leave someone behind to help you stay together, and I'm going to go on to the next town. So these are some lessons from Patrick. So what are applications for you from the lessons? Well, let me boom, 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 boom. Now, let me listen. Stay faithful, friends, when things get hard. Stay faithful. Boy, think of Patrick. At age 16, he's a slave boy. At age 48, they call the slave boy to come back. And he lives 80 more years doing ministry. He stayed faithful through tough times. There were rejections. There were, oh my goodness. Unbelievable. But he stayed faithful in the hard times. Trust God's plan. God gave to Patrick a plan. And he stayed with that. He trusted it. Step out in faith. Some of the things that God had Patrick doing had never been done. But he stepped out in faith. Meet people where they are. Let God use you. God can use anyone. He wants to use everyone. Did you know that? Yes, you. You right now, God wants to use you. He loves you. He wants you to come home to him. And he wants to use you. Doesn't make any difference what age. Look at this. Patrick should have been dead at age 48, and God said, I'm going to use you. But I'm retired. But, you know, our butts get in the way all the time. That's the problem. Well, I can't believe I said that. I'm sorry for those of you that got offended, but you do. I mean, we sit up. We want to sit. God says, get up. Don't sit. Get up. Get up. And Patrick, when he should have been dead, he's out doing what God called him for 28 years. I want you to think about that from a number standpoint. So 48 is when he dead. He lives another 30 years, 28 years. Almost 30. So divide that up. That's amazing. God gave him life to do what God had for him. If you're alive, God still has a purpose for you. Otherwise, he'd call you home. There'd be no reason for you to stay on planet Earth. He'd say, come on home to the place I've prepared for you. But he didn't say that to you because you wouldn't be listening to me right now. You're alive, friends. You're alive. You're absolutely alive. God can use you. It's never too late to obey God's call. So that's St. Patrick. I love the story of St. Patrick. I love the testimony of his life. I find it stimulating. I find it motivating. I find it encouraging. And I love celebrating. So on Friday, it's okay to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. It's okay. Some people think it's only if you're Irish. Some people think it's only if you're Catholic. Some people think for whatever. But you know what? It's not. It's for you, Christ follower. St. Patrick is for you to celebrate. It's okay. It's okay. Protestant, go ahead, celebrate. Norwegian, Swede, go ahead, celebrate. It's okay. Have fun with it. So, I want to invite you. Have a great St. Patrick's Day. Next week, remember, we're going to be out and about, and you're going to be in a place that you're never going to guess. Okay? Blessings on you. Thanks for joining me, and cheers.